Hey everyone, this is our show for April 16th, 2020. We hope you're taking care of yourself and getting the support you need during this time. If you've been tuning into our recent episodes, you'll know that a couple of weeks ago, we did an episode about anti-Asian xenophobia. We collected so many revealing and inspiring interviews for that show, more than we could fit into a single episode. And there was a conversation with two Vietnamese-American doctors that has continued to stick with us through this time. So we wanted to take some time to share two interconnected and inspiring stories about healing and community in the face of xenophobia and COVID-19.
Our mother actually instilled in us very, very early at a young age that though you are an American, you were born in America, and we definitely are Americans, we don't want to forget our ethnic roots.
I'm Jialian Yang, and from St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here. Our first story is about two Vietnamese-American sisters who grew up in a family of healers, Dr. Mimi and Dr. Mai Vo. This is Dr. Mimi.
Our grandfather was an Asian herbalist physician, so he used herbs to treat patients for a multitude of diseases in the late 1800s and early 1900s. He sent my father to the big city, to Saigon, to become a physician when my father was a teenager. And my father was actually a physician in the South Vietnamese Army as a trauma surgeon and on the front lines of war between North and South Vietnam. And when we grew up, my sister and I actually were brought into the office to help out.
And this is Mimi's sister, Dr. Mai.
We would go into my dad's practice, and one of the first things I can remember doing at his practice was just telling people, hey, can you please sign in? And then when they would sign in, we would take the clipboard, run into whoever the receptionist was at that time and say, hey, can you pull out the file?
Mimi went on to medical school to study internal medicine, and Mai stayed on at their father's practice as a receptionist.
I would see firsthand how he would, you know, do, you know, tying of the knots, like surgical knots. And so when I went to medical school, I was one of those medical students that already knew how to tie knots because my dad showed me how.
Today, Dr. Mai uses that firsthand learning as a nephrologist at St. Louis University who develops curriculum to train new kidney doctors. And Dr. Mimi is the owner of Vo Medical Clinic, where she practices alongside her father when she's not serving at another hospital in town.
My office is largely a Vietnamese group of patients. The office started actually when about 30 years ago, my father decided to open on the weekends in St. Louis City so that Vietnamese patients would have a place to go to. And it started actually in the back of my mom's hair salon. There was just such a great demand for patients who needed a physician that could relate to them and could speak to them in their native language. So my father then purchased a building a little bit further down, and that's how the office was started.
According to the 2018 census, there are over 2,500 Vietnamese-speaking households in St. Louis City, most of which have limited English-speaking proficiency. When Mimi needs to refer their patients to the hospital, she sends them to St. Louis University, which is located on the same street, less than 20 minutes by bus, where they can meet with her sister.
When I go and talk to those patients and I explain things in the native tongue in Vietnamese, they always give me a big hug. And on multiple occasions, I've had patients say, I thank the Lord because I must have done something right to have a Vietnamese doctor speak to me. So I feel like have a large impact in terms of guiding care and taking care of our patients because they feel very comfortable with us.
It was those patients who first brought their attention to COVID-19 back in January. And so Dr. Mimi was able to make a number of changes to her practice well before St. Louis City and County issued their shelter-in-place order. She switched her practice to telemedicine and began seeing patients via video chat. Meanwhile, the wider St. Louis Vietnamese community made changes too. There was no huge Tet celebration for Lunar New Year, no lion dancing, no big banquets, no chance for families to gather. They adjusted to social distancing as multi-generational and even multi-family households. Doctors Mimi and Mai Vo live across the street from each other, but even they have limited contact between their families, and taking precautions against the virus presents another layer of complication for Dr. Mai, whose spouse is also a doctor. They have two children under the age of 10, and one of them has severe asthma, which runs in the Vo family.
What happens if both my husband and I are sick to the point where we're hospitalized, if we're intubated, if something, you know, worse comes to worse, we die? I spoke to Mimi yesterday about possibly, you know, seeing a lawyer and going through our will and our trust. And it's hard because I am not very old. I'm in my 30s, my husband as well in his 30s. But for us to have to think about that, that is difficult. We've seen posts on our physician groups. There was one person who, while she was posting, she was tearful. She said, my daughter asked me the other day, so mommy, will we be in orphanages? And will all kids who have parents who are physicians, will they be in orphanages? And for a 5 or 6 year old girl to ask this, it's heartbreaking.
And Dr. Mimi has seen a rising level of concern among local healthcare workers.
People in healthcare are 8 to 10 times more likely to get ill and to get sick from this. And we are scared. You know, people in healthcare right now, we are scared. What happens in the situation where all the nurses and doctors and people in healthcare are all either ill at home or not a lot around anymore? Who is going to take care of all of the rest of the patients who are there?
These hard questions and the sacrifices that come with the decision to stay in the fight against COVID-19 make it especially hard to also contend with the rise in anti-Asian xenophobia. And Dr. Mai tells us that their mother stopped going out to public places, even with her grandchildren.
I had asked her, what's going on? I see you're at home a lot more often. And she had mentioned, she said, you know, with what is going on right now, the racism is going to be very high and I just don't want to put myself out there. And I think that she was on the right track in terms of thinking that, because when her and my father came over, it was 1975. Back then there weren't that many Asians. And so she felt the racism firsthand back then. And so now for her, it's like that coming all back up again. And so she knows what it feels like to be targeted, to be attacked. As a physician and being Asian, I remember several weeks ago, I was in the hospital and I started coughing because I swallowed my spit. And that's a normal thing that happens. I was in the elevator and I actually, instead of going from 1 to 9, I got off at the 3rd floor because I just wanted to just get off instead of having a bunch of people look at me and think, oh my God, she has the China virus. The xenophobia, why is it happening? Because people are saying that it's the China virus. You can say that, but you're not learning anything and you're not changing the future by just keeping on to that thought process. And it's like learning from history, right? What can we learn from previous history so that we don't make the same mistakes? In this setting, we have to learn from other countries and, you know, what's been going on there. So the lag time is about, 10 days for Missouri in terms of the outbreak compared to other states. Compared to other countries, we're behind, you know, a couple weeks, if not months. And so I think it's really important to learn about what they are doing instead of judging them and, making racist remarks. So we can learn from South Korea, we can learn from Japan, we can learn from Singapore and from Hong Kong. How is it that they have been able to flatten the curve?
The sisters take pride in how the St. Louis Asian American community has risen up to the occasion and joined the fight against the virus. Dr. Mai says that the St. Louis Chinese community has been collecting N95 masks for local hospitals, and in their first round of donations, they collected around 300,000 masks. And Dr. Mimi has been working with the St. Louis Vietnamese community to coordinate an effort to make cloth masks for doctors, nurses, and healthcare workers.
The Vietnamese community is standing up and we're going to be a part of this help because this is what we do. In times of fear and in times of danger, everybody needs to come together and we need to have solidarity and humanity and sacrifice, and we have to have hope that this will work. But it's going to take every single person to come together. And if we don't do that, then there's no compassion, and that unity isn't there. This is going to drag out a lot longer. There's going to be a lot more deaths. There's going to be a lot more sickness.
Both our parents are fighters. They're mentally strong, and that's how we were raised. So I just, every day, instead of sitting in a corner and being scared, I try to think outside the box and think, what can we do to fight this? If we run out of masks, what is plan B? If plan B doesn't work, what is plan C? I've posted on my social media, you know, pictures of me with my mask, pictures of me with my shield. And my comments are, we're going to fight this. We're going to go down fighting. We're not going to sit here and be scared. And so at this point, it's just one of those like fight or flight kind of thing. I'm in fight mode right now. And that's what's taking me through. I don't know how long I'll be able to do this for, but definitely having the support of my family. My aunts are helping me sew masks. My mom's helping me sew masks. My sister encouraging me, helping to spread the word. That's really helping me to get through this.
We've been doing this for generations as healers. And so we are generally a more compassionate group of people. And that has helped us to continue to do what we do on a daily basis. For me, that remembering that has gotten me to continue.
Up next, we hear from Christina Lay, the current president of the St. Louis Vietnamese Community Organization, about how Doctors Mimi and Mai Vo are supported by a larger effort by the St. Louis Vietnamese community to equip people on the front lines of the fight against COVID-19. The fall of Saigon brought with it the first wave of Vietnamese refugees to places around the world, including the U.S. And the second wave came in the 80s and 90s with a series of international and U.S.-based policies that paved a legal path for Vietnamese refugees to resettle in the U.S. And more than 4,000 Vietnamese refugees have resettled over the last four decades in St. Louis, making them the second highest population of refugees in the region.
My parents were we're considered broke people after the Vietnam War.
Christina Lay, the current president of the St. Louis Vietnamese Community Organization, came to the U.S. when she was a child.
And I grew up with my parents struggling with the culture and the language in St. Louis. And when I see Vietnamese people or any ethnicity that are struggling with the language and the culture, I always like to reach out to help them, because it's like helping your parent, helping a friend. Get through everything that they need to get through.
From a young age, she learned firsthand how difficult it is for immigrants and refugees to access medical services.
There's always a language barrier with my parents growing up. I was the official family interpreter, and then I became a family translator. As a kid, I did not have the medical terminologies that I need to describe everything that they're going through. So there's a difficulty of the language barrier applying for any benefits or explaining the benefits or the communication with the healthcare workers.
But then her parents met Dr. Tan Vo, father to Doctors Mimi and Mai Vo, who we heard from earlier in the show.
And they were excited because Dr. Vo and another doctor too, Dr. Phuong Nguyen, he is also a Vietnamese doctor. And they were excited to be able to communicate with the doctors.
And she says that culturally competent healthcare providers like Doctors Tan, Mimi, and Mai Vo can also prevent the misunderstandings and prejudice that stand in the way of good care.
I think the greatest thing about the Vo family is they're able to understand the Vietnamese people, relate to the culture and the language and the traditions. It eliminates the fear of, am I going to be able to communicate with a doctor? It eliminates the fear of, how am I going to explain why I have these red circle marks, which are come from cupping or coining, which Asians tend to do, because we believe that's like a way of relieving pain or, you know, pressure or a cold or something like that, versus my kid shows up to the ER with these red marks on their chest or their back, and it's considered, it will be mistaken as child abuse. And they're able to explain what the diagnosis in detail, and the patients can understand better.
Christina isn't a doctor, but she has found another way to support those on the front lines of the fight against COVID-19.
It started with myself and a few ladies who just wanted to make masks to help donate to the healthcare workers.
Word started to spread in the St. Louis Vietnamese community. And when the nail salon owners and nail technicians learned about the effort, they went all in.
They jumped the gun and they said, well, we're unemployed right now. And we have these masks and these gloves. And some nail salon owners found out that we were sewing. And so they bought their own sewing machines and their own fabric. All materials were donated individually by the people who participated. And then some of the nail salon owners contacted me and said, I'm going to place some orders and I'm going to try my best to place some orders for some supplies. And hopefully we can get this in time so that we can donate to the hospitals and the medical facilities in need.
Their effort has grown to the point that it's hard to keep track of exactly how much the St. Louis Vietnamese community has donated to equip frontline workers in the fight against COVID-19. At this point, they've given over 40,000 pairs of gloves, around 2,000 sewn masks, 300 gallons of disinfecting alcohol, and around 150 16-ounce bottles of hand sanitizer. And those supplies have filled in the gap for healthcare facilities, retirement and assisted living facilities, nursing homes, law enforcement and postal workers, the local children's hospital, and even the St. Louis County Health Department.
The seamstresses who are involved, they work day and night without pay, out of their own pocket to get all these masks to these healthcare workers. It just makes me feel so good because we're, and just for people to pick up the mask and the healthcare workers to say, oh my gosh, thank you so much. They're beautiful. They work. Oh my gosh, my mask gonna last a little longer. And it just, I don't know how to describe the feeling of, it's just heartfelt. It's very warm when you see that and how appreciative they are. And you can tell that it's an appreciation from one human to the other human. And to see the smiles on these healthcare workers when we give them these homemade masks or a simple bottle of hand sanitizers that we were able to like gather together. I mean, their eyes are grateful. They're just great. It just makes you feel so good. And the unity of the community. I never thought that this would get this big because simply, like I said, it started with me and two other ladies trying to just to sew masks to give to our friends who work in the healthcare industry so that it can prolong their existing PPEs that they are required to wear.
Fighting COVID-19 is an uphill battle. And even though Christina Lay and the rest of the St. Louis Vietnamese community are giving countless hours and dollars to protect frontline workers from the virus, she's worried about anti-Asian xenophobia, a threat that might linger even if or when the virus subsides.
I was at a grocery store and this particular cashier said hi to everybody that was in front of me. And when it came to me, she just scanned my things and just gave me the amount and I paid her without her saying hello or greeted me or thank you or anything. And then after I grabbed my bags and I walked out, she said hi to the next person. And then I looked and I said, wait a minute, what happened? I wasn't rude. I didn't do anything. And then I realized that I was Asian. I was the only Asian person in line and I felt hurt.
Christina and other Asian Americans I've interviewed during the COVID-19 outbreak often feel the tension between wanting to be accepted by American society and the conviction that they deserve to be treated with dignity and respect simply for being human.
What is classified as American? Is there a definition as to how you have to behave or what you have to do to be considered American? I've never heard of a definition that you have to act a certain way to be American.
And while some might argue that the key to accessing dignity and respect is assimilation, the actions of the St. Louis Vietnamese community, many of whom came to the U.S. with nothing, demonstrate that perhaps the path forward is through solidarity.
We want to come back with sort of like a gentle heart. You know, we just want to show that we want to help and we're standing up to everything that's being said about Asians. I hope that after this pandemic that everybody can see how united we are, no matter what color you are, your ethnicity or your background. We come together during the time of need as humans and we are fighting with something that we cannot see, we cannot foresee and we don't know about. So I'm hoping that people will put everything aside and just look at each other as humans, as a whole, because we are all humans and we are whole. And that's how we're going to be able to fight through this.
This show is produced by me, Jalian Yang, and my co-producer, Lauren Brown. This show is overseen by Tim Lloyd, Senior Producer of On Demand and Content Partnerships, and Robert Peterson, Director of Radio Programming and Operations at St. Louis Public Radio. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.